Before I start, so I don't absentmindedly forget, I really want to see everybody before we all go on our diaspora to our own places. So I was thinking, I know there's a little bit of a waiting list, and maybe even some people haven't signed up, but we could start at 1:30 and end at 3:30, and then I can also find some other times. So if it was ever doing the schedule, if after the class you could put those spaces in, and then if I'm not getting to see somebody, then please let me know so that I can, so that we can find our own time. Yeah. It's coming upon us. Amazing. Okay, let's take a moment. Sahana Bhavatu, Sahana Bhunaktu, Saha Viryam Karavavahai, Tejasvinapatitamastu Mavidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Let's chant verse 20. Somebody repeat after me. Nabahyo nantara sachi. Nabahyo nantara sachi. Buddher deshau hitau ubhau. Buddher deshau hitau ubhau. Buddhyad yasheshasam shantau. Buddhyadyasheshasam shantau. Yatra bhatyasti tatra saha. Yatra bhatyasti tatra saha. Na bahyaha. Na antaraha. Sakshi. Budehe. Deshau. Hi. Tau. Ubau. Buddhi. Adi. Ashesha, Samshantau, Yatra, Bhati, Asti, Tatra, Saha. So in the first 19, there's this one first, the first compound of the verse. It says Nijasthana Stittha, and then Sakshi. I mean, Sakshi means the witness. Just is situated, abides in its own self. You know, so Nija means one's own self. It just stays within itself. It doesn't go. It doesn't. He says for the Sakshi, there isn't any external and internal. There's no coming and going. Like I'm going outside, now I'm coming back inside. There's no internal or external. There's no such thing as coming and going. All of those type of things are due to the buddhi. Because of the buddhi, because of the activity of the buddhi, there's an as though coming and going. And that's the darshanta. That was preceded by the, you know, the beam of light and your hand is shaking the light. The light's not doing anything. It is stable within itself. Right, and the light is a good the sunlight is a good drishtanta for the self, in that it doesn't depend on anything at all for its being. It's within the confines of a illustration. It simply is luminous. Nobody's lighting it up. Nobody has anything to. It can't really be touched in any way. And even if you're moving your hand through it, the light remains actually the same. It's just an illusion, you know, that there's some movement going on. The movement going on is only because of the movement of the hand, creating shadows and that type of thing. And so then the question comes up in my commentary here, where he says, you know, if the self, if the Sakshi just abides within itself as its own being, then he says, what is this? What is this external, internal, the space, this dacious taha, where does that abide? You know, the internal and external and the coming and going, where is that all located? Because if it's not located in the Atma, in the Sakshi, then who's responsible for that experience? And so he asked that question. And so it says here, Nibahyaha na antaraha Sakshi. The Sakshi, which is the Chidvap, Chid means consciousness, Vapu means like a form of the body, the one whose body is just pure consciousness, is Chedvapahu. The Sakshi, really, the one that we call the witness because of the things that are illumined by the Sakshi, we call it the witness, that's really just pure consciousness. And so here, this Sakshi, or the Sakshi, there's no bahya and no antara. For it, there's no external and there's no internal for the Sakshi. But then, where do these ideas belong then? So he says, buddhehe de shao hi tau ubao. Tau ubao means both of these terms, interior and exterior, both of these terms have their place, their desha, in the buddhi itself. So we'll look at that in a minute. So that's where they are. They're not in the atma. They're not in the sakshi. They are in the buddhi vrittis. So then he says, buddhi adi buddhyadi ashesha samshantau. Samshantau means, comes from shanti, and here is in a locative singular. So when there is that samyak shanti, he means very pure, deep shanti, for the buddhi, etc. Buddhi, etc. means the buddhi, all of the different types of buddhi vrittis, and also the sense organs. So when all of these means of knowledge, right, that our kind of window or our way of participating in this creation at all is really because we have a mind. And so when the mind, when the buddhi becomes completely quiet, gains complete shanti, ashesha means without any little parts hanging out or remaining. Ashesha samshantau. So when the mind has just completely, we can say upadati means it comes into just a complete resolution. It's simply not active. As you can say, like nirvikalpa samadhi, when the mind is not having any type of buddhi vrittis, of vrittis of any subject-object relationship. The subject-object relationship really also takes place within the vritti. It's an important thing to understand. There is no real subject-object relationship. But there is in every single vritti, it is as though there, because an ahankara is in every vritti. The ahankara, that I notion, is in every vritti because of the adhishtana of the vritti. Adhishtana, remember, this has to be one of your English words that's become English for you. The adhishtana is really what the maya totally depends on for its being. So the rope is the adhishtana for the snake, the clay is the adhishtana for the pot, and conscious being is the adhishtana for this creation. And so we have that samanya jnanam of my nature, really in reference to the entire creation, not just in reference to this body. Even the all pervasiveness, as we'll see from the standpoint of the creation, we have samanya jnanam. That means we have this general, a very general recognition, but of course we don't have the vishesha jnanam to be able to differentiate it properly. But just by the mere fact, so we're still in adhishtana here, just by the mere fact that you cannot ever have an experience that is away from consciousness. From knownness, we can say, if I use language in that, consciousness. If we talk of consciousness, like we talk of Sakshi as the one because of whom the vrittis are illumined, you know, we can talk as knownness, which is the experience of consciousness in language-wise in reference to the vritti. So every vritti, every experience that you have, whether internal or external, which are concepts that only belong to the buddhi and they're in reference to the ahankara, really, and whatever can be objectified. Whatever can be objectified, so I become the knower of that as though, that's bahya, that's external. When my mind is recognizing my being in the vritti, because every vritti enjoys consciousness, it's sattva, and so every vritti is known, it is known because of the nature of consciousness, right? And so that nature of consciousness is divided in terms of language. It's just divided in terms of language. Actually, the experience that it's dividing, it doesn't actually exist, but this is what the buddhi does. Because I know I'm a conscious being, and I don't know that I'm the pot, or whatever I'm objectifying. And so the ahankara labels me, in the vritti, the one, the conscious being. And then it labels, so I become, in language, I become the knower of what is known in the same vritti. So it just depends on where the vritti is directed. Like if I'm looking at this room, then the room becomes known. And since that vritti exists in consciousness, conscious being, which is my own self, then I'm not going to say, I am the room. I'm going to say, I am the knower of the room. But in reality, when we really analyze our experience, there is no knower known. There's the consciousness, which is the very nature of the self, which in reference to the vritti, the ahankara, actually we can blame it on the ahankara. The ahankara divides this up. Because actually all that's happening is everything that is contained in the vritti is known, right? And the knownness is actually the consciousness, with which is me. There is no knower. There's knownness. There's consciousness. This consciousness is divided up within samsara, not in reality. So that's why, say, we're doing contemplation, or you have a moment of complete absorption, where the mind is really not active. It's just kind of absorbed into its own adhishtana, actually. It's another thing. The adhishtana is what is actually there. So to say that it's not that the buddhi is kind of becoming quiet and now absorbing into consciousness. It's like saying, you know, that the pot is meditating and now it's absorbing into clay. It's not absorbing into clay. There's nothing there but clay. And the pot itself is mitya, right? And so because we experience the pot, we give it that reality. But actually, there's no pot there. And here, in terms of myself and the buddhi, there really is no buddhi that has any distance or separation from me. The buddhi, I am the buddhi, in the sense of what is actually there. Like the clay will say, I am the pot. There is no pot. I can say, I am the buddhi. There is no really buddhi, you know. The buddhi is mitya. What is there is the satchitatma, which is myself, and myself by the ahankara, by this I notion. It divides up the experience of the vritti to what we call the vishya, what is bahya, what can be objectified, and the experience, self-evident experience of my being. And since I don't have enough knowledge to recognize that I'm both the self of what is objectified and the self, and the self of the subject. That's the fact of it. I am the self of the subject and the self of the object. But from my own standpoint, that's only from the standpoint of the buddhi. That's not from my standpoint. From my standpoint, I simply am, like the clay. I am conscious being, and this conscious being that I am, for me, there is no inner or outer. There is not even, let's get to the rest of this here. And so anyway, just to finish this verse and then I'll go on. So he says, this top line, these concepts, both of the concepts of there being an inner and outer, that has nothing to do with the Sakshi. For the Sakshi is situated only in itself. It is self-evident, and that is all that there's no duality for there to be an inner and outer. So then where does this duality of see or seen, know or known take place? He says that belongs, that those concepts are all located only in the buddhi. And that's why I was just talking about that in terms of the relationship of the vritti, the mitya vritti, to the adhishtana. From the standpoint of the adhishtana, there's no inner and outer. From the standpoint of the buddhi, because there are, I think it's a Driktrisha Vivek, it says, you know, there's five things. There's five things to in any vritti. One is the Satchit Ananda, is there? And then Namarupa. So in any vritti, this is going to take place. Satchit Ananda, Namarupa. And I'm not the Namarupa. The Namarupa is objectified if I differentiate myself in terms of the experience of the vritti. I'm not going to say I'm the name and form. I'm going to say I'm the conscious being, the knower of the name and form. So this is the problem. There's a name and form, and there's you. You don't take yourself to be the name and form that you're experiencing. And yet, the name and form is known. And since the name and form, because it's a vritti, since the name and form is known, then now you're left out, right? The name, you don't think I'm the name and form. You think the name and form is known, which is true for any vritti. Now, what language are you going to use to account for your self-experience in that vritti? You'll say, well, known, what goes along with known? Knower. There's actually a triputi. There's knower, knowing, known. In reality, I am the consciousness, which is the very self of the knower. I'm the very being, the satchit of the pramana, the means of knowledge, and I'm the very being of the object of knowledge. So otherwise, they couldn't be known. But all three are known. We forget that also the ahankara, this changing ahankara, always identifying with whatever experiences are taking place, is continually changing. Continually changing and never changing. It's continually changing because it identifies with the upadis. It's never changing because it's always there. The upadis go on changing, and as the upadis go on changing, I identify with them. But it's not that I come and go. All the vrittis come and go. I don't come and go. So this adhishtana, for my nature is consciousness, conscious being. And I'm not inside or outside, I'm just myself. There is no subject-object relationship in consciousness. It's a consciousness would have to divide itself up into a knower and known. How could that be possible? You know, and to divide itself up into knower and known, you have to be within time and space. But time and space itself is objectifiable. And you don't experience yourself as knower known. You only label yourself that in reference to what's going on within a given vritti. But you're not walking around as knower known. Yeah. Well, what's your nature? Oh, my nature is knower known. Yeah. No. My nature is just me, really one non-dual me. And we won't use the word non-dual, but I don't have parts inside of my being. You know, like I have a right side and a left side and an up and a down, and I have this color and that color. Those are things all belong to samsara. In reference to your being, there is no time, there is no space, there's just me. That's what we mean by non-dual. And then this me plays out, not from its own standpoint, but in reference to the creation, depending on what the nature of the upadi is. So here's this whole manifest creation, what we have to circle around, what are our experience really, in terms of my own nature, there's a samanya jnanam there, a general knowledge, because I can say, know, be clear, that every experience that I have exists. What experience that you have doesn't exist? You can't say that. You can't separate an experience from being itself. You can say the experience comes into being and go out of being, but when the experience is there, it exists. That means it's the invariable. Every single vritti that you have exists. And when the vritti goes, it's replaced by another vritti, but the existence just remains. That's what we mean by adhishtana. The being, me, just remains. And then I can't say that any experience that I have, only some of the experiences that I have are known. No. You can't have an experience that's not known. Every experience is illumined by conscious being, which is the Satchitatma, which is yourself. And so that what I mean by the Samanya Jnanam is that existence being, you take that completely for granted, and you never separate your experience. You probably don't think about it, but if it's pointed out, you'll say, yeah, no, I don't accept that. I don't separate the experiences that I have from being. Every experience I have is, it exists. Every experience I have is known. And then when we take it a little farther, even my own nature, this me, I am, right? And I am known. But now the knownness takes on a different quality, the one that is real, actually. it's not that I am known by a knower. I am simply known because I'm self-evident consciousness. And so this is kind of a really very meaningful understanding worthy of some contemplation. Because this knownness without a knower is what we call just self-evident conscious being. It would go back into an infinite regress if we had to illumine conscious being. So myself is something that's, in a sense, easily differentiated. Once it's pointed out, it's easily differentiated from all of the experiences that you have, from every vritti that you have. And what we have to, this is a little jump that we have to make, is I can recognize, like I say, if I say you're just yourself, the sakshi, the chidvapahu, the consciousness, it itself doesn't require a knower because it itself is consciousness. And in language, that gives the experience of being known. So if we understand this use of language, that this, the consciousness, the me, if I say it is known or I am self-evident, self-shining, swaprakasha, we have all these words for it, I am self-evident, and then use it in language in reference to the world, I can say I am known. I am known without a knower. Everybody follow that? I am known without a knower. Well, all of the vrittis are known without a knower. Every vritti is known without a knower. There is no knower. And once you start analyzing your experience, everything is known. But in fact, even that is a little misleading. Even that's a little misleading. Because the only thing that is known is consciousness. So it's not that consciousness is making these vrittis or these perceptions known. It's the vrittis are maya, they're mitya. They don't have any being whatsoever apart from self-evident consciousness. But self-evident consciousness is the experience, if we want to use, just using language, of being known. And so when I have this maya vritti, you know, which is sattva, means it as though reflects or manifests consciousness, then the knownness, the self-evident nature, the knownness of consciousness is there, along with the vritti. And so then what do we say? It's another, what we call anyonya adyasa, a superimposition. Well, now, you know, I become the knower and this becomes the known. I just make that up, actually. What is actually happening, and the mind makes it up because of ignorance, but what is actually happening is the knownness, me, consciousness, remains as it is, which we can translate in terms of consciousness or knownness, and then the vrittis are taking place in that knownness. And so it's not that the vrittis are known. Knownness is known. Knownness is self-evident. It's not that the vrittis are... It's not that the self, because it's consciousness, is illumining the vritti so the vritti can be known. The knownness only belongs to consciousness. There's no leakage there. But the vritti also has no being apart from consciousness because it's mitya. Right? And so this idea, you know, that because of consciousness, all of these vrittis are being known, this is known, this is known, this is known. Now we have to tweak that just a little bit, you know, because that's a teaching methodology and it helps us along the way to understand it that way. But what is actually happening, if you understand the vrittis are mitya, is that these vrittis, this whole creation, takes place in knownness, which belongs to me, not to them. There's only one knownness. There's only one consciousness. And this word, knownness or consciousness or self-evident, belongs to consciousness. There is no second thing to be illumined. And so the beauty of this is that this whole creation is an expression of consciousness. And of course, the whole creation, including my body, mind, sense organs, all of the upadis, everything that we experience, is really it's maya, which has for, is rooted in existence, in consciousness. Your experience of this creation, you can look at it as just the manifestation, you know, the Maya manifestation of consciousness itself. With consciousness, not good, consciousness means me, so you have to always bring it back to yourself. Consciousness doesn't go through any modification whatsoever to become this creation or to become these upadis. And these upadis, conditioning adjuncts of the body, mind, sense organs, etc., they have no other being than consciousness, like clay pot. And so we experience everything that comes our way within the creation as it is known, it is known, it is known, it is known. But if you get rid of the whole creation, what is there? It is known. Get rid of any subject-object relationship, it is known. That it is known is just language for saying, I am self-evident consciousness. I am known because I am consciousness. And so the knownness doesn't come from anything else. The knownness is just a word. That word is pointing to the very nature of consciousness being self-evident. And so these words also are a little problematic, because when we say just within samsara, within the world, oh, I know that, and yeah, this is known, and this is known, and this is known. It's like I'm collecting knowledge, you know, which is understandable within samsara, but then when we get down to what is actually happening, is that there are just different Maya manifestations, right, of the knowledge. If we use the word knowledge, which is consciousness. Not, if you use the word knowledge in this way, you have to use it in the sense as like a synonym of consciousness itself. So this is known, this is known, this is known, this is known. You think that the knownness is happening because the object is there. But what I'm saying is, and what the Shastra is saying, not just me, if the object is not there at all, the knownness is still there because the knownness is me, the knownness is consciousness. And that knownness, that consciousness, abides in its own being. There is no other being. There's no other place for it to abide, you know. Space, time and space and all of these things are all products of Maya. That's where we have to do all of this analysis, because we're so identified, of course, you know, as being identified with the upadis, with this jiva upadi within the creation, and all the subject-object relationships are there. They all are there within Maya. But Maya is mitya. Mitya has no being at all, zero. It's like, but we experience it, so we call it mitya. It has no being apart from the adhishtana, but since we experience, we don't say it's non-existent. Yeah? That's a big difference between saying like the examples they use, like the horn of a rabbit or the son of a barren woman. These are stock examples from thousands of years ago. You know, those things have no existence. The idea is, for something that is non-existent, you don't experience it. It's not there to be experienced. So you have to differentiate this absolute non-existence from this, from Maya. Because upon analysis, this has no independent existence at all. There's too many, we've gone through these prakriyas several times, to just really strongly bring to light that every experience that you have comes into existence and goes out of existence. But that it comes into existence, what's its prior condition? And if it goes out of existence, what's its prior condition? Is it non-existence? So nothing comes from non-existence. That's an impossibility, because when we use non-existence, we call it tucham, it's not there for anything to come out of. You know? Or this is born of non-existence. But there is no non-existence. That's what we mean by the word. It is not there. And yet, all of our experiences come into and go out of existence. When they are here, and only when they are here, they exist and they are known. We say. But actually, the only thing that exists and is known is self-evident consciousness. And this whole universe is just a beautiful display. It is like Ishwara's incredible expression. Brahman's with Maya, we call Ishwara. It's just the incredible expression of its being. But there's no second thing there, you know. And so where does the second thing, how do we get all all this time and space and subject and object, how does that all come? That exists in the buddhi, you know. And he in the Vidyaranya uses, you know, it's the imagination of the buddhi. Imagination, it's just a translation, it's not a good translation. What it means is this. Your buddhi has the capacity, right, because of the sense organs and the manas and the antakarana, to gain knowledge, I would say, to gain images. Like, for instance, here in this room, we are not seeing the room, actually. We are seeing a vritti of the room, right? And so what is actually happening for us is through our sense organs, our five sense organs, we go out, they as though go out and come back and go in and out. When they go out and they take like a snapshot or a picture as though of this room that we're experiencing. So you're always experiencing the vritti. And as long as the vritti is using an adequate pramana, we say that we are gaining knowledge and that there's a real matchup between the vritti and Ishvara, whatever is in reality objectified here. You know? So, so what? You mean that? Okay, so when through contemplation or teaching or through pranayama or all our meditative techniques, we are able, he's talking about an actual reality of an experience here. If you withdraw the vritti, you can absorb the vritti, you can withdraw the vritti, so it has this samshanti. Samshanti means this, you know, profound silence without any agitation anywhere. Then that vritti doesn't have any type of objectification. Because I've withdrawn the vritti, it's really, in a sense, it's withdrawing into its own adhishtana, into its own self. When that's the case, time, space, any time of objectification, subject-object relation thing, all of this, none of that is experienced. And so now, just abiding as myself with the vritti absorbed in me as though it's absorbed in its own adhishtana. Absorbed means it is not directed outward into a subject-object relationship, so it's just coming into my own being. Then I shine in what way? Where am I located? For me now, there's without this projection of the vritti, or without the vritti, utilization of the vritti to form those images that include time and space and objectification. If I withdraw that vritti, then where am I situated? And they say, if when that vritti is withdrawn, or when it becomes really a shanta vritti that isn't engaged in the world, it just becomes quiet, you're with yourself, then where are you? Where are you? So he says, what he says is, when that happens, then he says, wherever you are, there you are. The idea is that your location is only yourself. There's no other location, you know. And so you are there, and that's where you are. There's no in going out or going in or having a little hideaway somewhere. There's no time, there's no space, but I am, I exist. I'm a conscious being, but there's no words either. I just simply am that. And so now we recognize that at moments that we call akhandakara vritti, when the teaching takes place, you see, and you have that moment of knowing. In our meditative practices, we have that moment of where there's a resolution of the mind, you know, and then the only one left there experientially is you. But what's beautiful about that is what is left there is you, self-evident you, your own amness, your own being, which is absolutely free. Yeah. And there's no time, there's no space, there's nowhere else to locate me. How to be located in space when there's no space being experienced? Yeah. And if I locate myself in space, I have to be identified with an upadhi. You know, if I locate myself in space and locate myself in samsara in such a way as I am the knower and this is the known, I have to really be within duality and identified with these upadhis, these conditioning adjuncts that are completely objectified. You know, so that's all fine. But then when you withdraw, that's just normal samsara. But when you withdraw the mind, then you're not located. You're not located anywhere. You are what is. There's no second thing. Where are you going to be located? You are your own location. That's what he's trying to say. Wherever you are, that is the location. Where the self is, that is where the self is. There's no time, there's no space, there's no knower known. There is just me. And from me, the Adhishtana, in this entire creation, projects, having no being of its own. So it's just a beautiful, the infinite mandala of Brahman, really. We call Ishwar because of the Maya, you know. And so for Jnani, it's a very beautiful, as we really sit in, more and more we sit in this, yourself, your me that you are, is never away from anything. But it's not that you become all-pervasive. You're not all-pervasive, because all-pervasive would mean, this is the next verse, all-pervasive would mean that you're like pervading space. So then you're taking up space. You pervade space, right? But you don't pervade anything. There's no activity for you. There's no time. There's no space. So if we say the Atma, for the self, I'm just conscious being. For me, there's no time or space or objectification. I just simply am. And yet, I'm all-pervasive from the standpoint of the creation. Because from the standpoint of the creation, there's, you know, time and space and duality. But all of that, starting with space, all of that depends totally just on me, on my being. Right? And so... I want to go to the next verse, because what we're talking about is the next verse. Because the questioner comes up, the Purvapakshi comes up kind of a little concerned. We're getting rid of space and everything. How can you do that? So he brings up this question, but so repeat after me. Desha ko pinabhaseta.
Desha ko pinabhaseta.
Yaditar hyastva desha bhak.
Yaditar hyastva desha bhak.
Sarva desha prakrityaiva.
Sarva desha prakrityaiva.
Sarva gattvam natu swataha.
Sarva gattvam natu swataha.
So the question is brought up, saying you're just abiding in yourself. You're saying then that there's really no space. Or there's no such thing as space. You know, how can you say that? Is it there's something wrong with that? You know, there's no space, really has no being or no existence. He says, "Deshaha space, kaha api nabhaseta." There's no space that shines, you know, that presents itself. Space is illumined; it's not self-evident, right? And so, you're saying there's no space, really. How can you say that? Are you saying there's no space? So Vidyavarnya says, you know, if you're worried about that, if you're saying that. What are you talking about? There's no space. And he says, Tarhi then, astu adeshabak. Yeah, let there be no space. If you're worried that there's no space, that's true. There's no space. In the Atma, there's no space. How could there possibly be space in the Atma when the space itself is objectified? Where is the space? Shut your eyes and the space is not there. Go to deep sleep. There's no space. You know, space is not something that has any type of substantial reality to give it any type of being whatsoever. You know, And so how can even the experience of the space is not going to be in consciousness, because consciousness doesn't have any eyes, it doesn't have any ears, it doesn't have any mind. It's the adhishtana of all of those things. So you don't have any mind, you don't have any eyes or ears or anything like that, then where is the space going to be? Say, well, it's in my buddhi. Yeah, okay, that's good. It's in your buddhi. But it's not in yourself. It's not in yourself. It's a part of maya. And the whole maya, including the five elements, space, air, fire, water, earth, and all of the elementals, all of those are part of this creation, which is mithya, that has me for its adhishtana. And so I am the satchit, I am the knownness of this whole beautiful, incredible, what Swamiji will often call this manifestation of infinite knowledge. This creation is a manifestation of infinite knowledge. I think he worked for a long time. He always was working on words, what words to use for this. And what is wonderful about, when I really loved it when he went into this type of understanding, the creation that is cyclical, comes into manifestation, and goes and stays, Srishti, Stiti, Laya. Srishti comes into manifestation, Stiti, it remains for some time, and then Laya, it goes into, you know, it's a causal condition from beginningless time. That's the vision of the Vedas. So this Srishti Stiti Laya of the creation, Swamiji calls as the Srishti Stiti Laya of manifest knowledge. And you can relate so deeply to that in terms of your own experience, because all of your experience, say you, memory, or say if I ask you to think of the Cephalu Ocean, yeah, walking along the beach, because you've done that or you've seen it from a distance, that which is in Laya is in unmanifest condition. Phew, there it is. It comes into manifest condition. And so for us as jivas, we have all of this stored in unmanifest knowledge. What if I said, you know, just remember, have a vritti of the beach in Cephalu. And then you say, what is Cephalu? Where is that? I'd say you can't do that, right? But if you've been to the beach and you know Cephalu, if I just say that, then immediately from your memory banks, from your knowledge that's in unmanifest condition, immediately it comes. So we have a huge body of unmanifest knowledge waiting to come into manifestation at the proper time when it's called forth. So now think of in terms of, so what that means is every time that comes into, any of your unmanifest knowledge comes into manifestation, then that manifestation is completely known. And to say it more correctly, that manifestation, which is really nothing but the satchit conscious being with the maya upadi in one form, limited form or limitless form, the knownness, the satchit of consciousness, right, is enjoyed by that manifestation. And so we will say in language, it is known. But in reality, the knownness is already there. Knownness is the invariable. Consciousness is the invariable. It's not that now this becomes known because it's there. The knownness is never not there. The knownness is the invariable. So these manifestations, as they come, of course they are known, but they're in the sense that they enjoy the knownness of the very swarupa of consciousness. And so so all of these things that come into us are a good example of the Ishwara Upadhi. Because same Maya, whether it's a limited part of Maya or an infinite part of Maya, it all takes place in the Satchit Atma, and so we'll all be known. It all will exist and be known. And depending on the type of Upadhi, that type of superimposition is always going to be there because it's ajnana. Like I could say as a jiva, here we all are as part of this Ishwara's infinite manifestation. Here we all are. You know, and these upadhis get to not only be known because of the nature of consciousness from their own standpoint, but they also have a mind and sense organs that can allow you to divide your experience up into knower known. Right? You're dividing it up within Maya, but you know, I mean, the lamp can't do that, the floor can't do that, because it doesn't have a sukshma sharira, it doesn't have a mind to be able to kind of, as though create this duality, create a duality out of one's experience. It's only once you really understand, as this knowledge becomes clear, you realize that all the knower and the known and all of the objects and the whole creation itself, you know, is an expression of consciousness. It isn't illumined by consciousness. It's not separate from consciousness. How can the clay, what would the clay have to do, the pot have to do, you know, to be clay? I mean, is the clay doing anything, you know, to give its being? Is the clay doing anything to give its being and its clayness to the pot? No, it's not, because there's only clay there. So it's not actually doing anything at all. That's what we have to see, the incredible nature of Maya. It is not, it doesn't change or hurt my being or do anything to it in any way. But within itself, there's infinite order. As Swamiji says, it's a manifestation, this creation, from the smallest to the biggest, whether you take an ant or a mosquito or a human being or Ishwara or the devatas, it doesn't make any difference. They all just are an infinite part of an infinite manifestation of Brahman, of the self, of your being. And your being isn't doing anything at all. It can't do anything because it's the only thing that is really there. All time and space and everything that exists in this creation, it is not there on its own independently. It's a display of infinite knowledge, and because it's a display of infinite knowledge, you can liken it to your own ahankara. I mean, your own mind. Because mind, every vritti that comes, every single vritti that comes, every memory that comes, it is known. You are its self. You know, I mean, we're saying this now in the context of this vision. But in the context of it, because we can just take that all for granted, of course that's... Yeah. But no, myself is what is actually here. And these vrittis come, and as they come, I am their center. I am their adhishtana. So say I have an imagination, or I ask you to have like some sort of a daydream. That entire daydream comes, and you are its adhishtana. It comes from you, is sustained by you, it resolves into you. The whole thing enjoys you. It enjoys not taking from you. It has your, the being that it has is you. The knownness that it has is you. There isn't it being known. It's not being known. It has for its adhishtana knownness, self-evident nature. And so this is just an incredible expression, a maya. It's an incredible expression of Ishwara. It's something amazing. And as you get more, you know, as you kind of sink down into this knowledge, what really happens is that the ahankara stops its identification with the upadis, really becomes mitya. Because we don't walk around saying, okay, now the body is walking and now the mind is thinking. But it becomes mitya because yourself is what is actually here, changeless, all-pervasive from the standpoint of the world, but situated in myself. And so the ahankara now is not landing anymore on this body, mind, sense organs as me. Only lands there as mitya out of convenience. But the aham lands on the self. That's self-knowledge. Instead of the aham being an ahankara landing on something within this incredible display of the creation, I recognize myself that is the adhishtana of the whole creation, the invariable that never comes and goes or changes in any way. And that's aparoksha. That's the reality. So it just takes a while for the mind to work through all of its kind of vasanas and all of its tendencies and all of the beginningless, you know, from beginningless birth, all of these type of very, very natural and shared, you know, misidentifications. Even when we see it's a misidentification and that that's not my nature at all, still there's a lot more to learn because the mind goes, leaves the class and then we're back into it. So there's a lot of teaching that has to take place until until the reality of this of your own self-evident changeless nature is just you. And then all of this is going on too. For Ishvara, it's exactly the same. All of this is just me. And all of this is going on too, but this that's going on is mitya. It's an expression, you know? It's an expression of infinite intelligence. That's why it's very nice for that we get to gain this knowledge, because we can walk through this expression of Ishvara and be in a relationship to it. All the while, having this jiva upadhi, as long as you're alive, you get to walk through Ishvara and see how Ishvara is doing this, and well, this is happening, and have that devotion and wonder, and seeing the infinite order of all of your experiences, you know, they all become meaningful, and you don't just, you have a hard time or this or that. That's a meaningful experience. It's not just a random experience. It belongs to Bhagavan. It belongs to the creation. You're involved in it, you know. And at the same time, you're totally free of all of it. So, that's it.
Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavasishyate Om Shanti 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 Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om.